Hey now, we are getting over, and I am the Silver King, Adam Silverstein, here to lead you through these hard times. Da-da. With a special WWE and NXT edition of your favorite professional wrestling podcast. That's right, Getting Over is back once again, and we are still covering the fallout from WWE WrestleMania 40. We have a bunch of news items and more to discuss on today's show. We're also going to recap the NXT after Stand and Deliver. Now, originally, the reason we scheduled this special WWE podcast on Thursday was because WWE WrestleMania 40 Behind the Curtain, a special, seemingly breaking kayfabe documentary about the pivot that led to the changed main events for WrestleMania 40, was supposed to be released Wednesday on YouTube, except Wednesday came and went and no documentary was published. The Silver King reached out to WWE on two separate occasions, only to be met with radio silence. I know others in the wrestling reporting sphere reached out to them as well and similarly did not receive any answers. Now, unofficially, I heard that WWE, the editing process, simply went too long. A lot of people internally thought that publishing the special documentary on Wednesday was quote-unquote ambitious and therefore unlikely, and that is obviously exactly what came to pass. We do not know when it is going to get published. If I had to take a guess at this juncture, I would say this coming Friday at noon, which means, of course, we will cover it next week on our WWE episode. Now, this also led to us pushing the AEW episode, where we're going to cover two full weeks of AEW television to Friday. So you are going to want to listen to that show, I promise you, particularly for one topic that you know the Silver King is going to get pretty hot about. But that is not what we are here to discuss today. We're here to talk WWE and NXT, and we're going to kick it off with a reminder that the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast
is all about the five.
So head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify, leave a five-star rating on Apple, take a little extra time, leave a five-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. It is also where you can send in tweets and DMs with questions and comments for the show. We received a ton of them over WrestleMania week. I promised you we would get to them originally. The intention was to do that on today's show. We're not going to have time. We will address them on Tuesday when Chris and I will also do our second look at WWE WrestleMania 40, along with covering even more extraneous WWE news and notes from that week into this week. All that coming this Tuesday on the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast. Please also remember,
I happen to love the number five.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You will get bonus audio, instant reactions to Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, except this week, because I'm traveling. Also, exclusive news posts every Friday, which you will still get this week. All of that at buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Now, in terms of acknowledgments, we have a backlog of acknowledgments to hand out on this podcast, whether it's reviews, new subscribers at buymeacoffee.com/gettingover, etc. And I want to make sure everyone gets their fair shake and their own individual shows. So it's so backlogged, these acknowledgments, that I've actually forgotten who I've shouted out and who I have not as of late. A few weeks ago, we provided the ability for some of you to contribute to us on Venmo or PayPal just as a way of supporting the show. And many of you did, including two folks more recently. Alan W., who provided a substantial contribution to the show, and Jason J., who did so as well. So I certainly want to acknowledge Alan and Jason, but I also just wanted to double back and ensure that everyone else who contributed on Venmo and PayPal received acknowledgments as well. So Louis V. and Sammy R., you guys both really hooked it up. Dave S., Ronald W., Craig F., Arlo S., Adam K., Martin A., Michael C., Blaine G. I appreciate all of you for supporting the show. I'm looking into some echo-reducing pads for the office, travel microphones for future events and interviews. Some of you sent us money just so Chris and I can get a couple beers. We will do that, I promise you. I appreciate all of you are getting overheads. Everyone who has left a five-star review, everyone who listens, everyone who supports us, it means a lot to both of us. Vintage Chris Vanini is here. Let me welcome you into today's show. Chris, this has just been an odd week for both of us, both in terms of our work lives and our Getting Over Wrestling podcast lives. It feels odd for me. You know how much I over-prepare for all of these shows to kind of do these off the cuff, but that's exactly what we're doing. And it's kind of fun, I guess, to do it this way.
Yeah, we're sort of live, pal. This is every year you're covering the Masters the week after WrestleMania, so it ends up being kind of a makeshift get-together. But we decided to do a second one of these because there is still a lot to talk about, and we didn't give you enough on Tuesday.
Yeah, even despite not having that behind-the-curtain documentary, we still have a full show worth of material for you today, and that is exactly what we're going to bring to you right now. Now, don't worry. We are going to talk about the WWE Hall of Fame. We're going to talk about Bray Wyatt becoming immortal.
But I'm afraid I've got some news.
And the WWE news this week is so massive that we already gave you a ton on Tuesday. We're going to give you a lot more now, and we're still going to have more to give you next Tuesday. So let's just start rolling through some of it. WWE announced that King and Queen of the Ring, along with an episode of SmackDown, will be the next Blood Money in the Sand show in late May. Now, despite the location, obviously, as longtime listeners of mine know, it popped me massively that they're finally bringing these back as a premium live event. King of the Ring, obviously, and Queen of the Ring, which the only time it was ever held was Queen's Crown, was an absolute disaster. Hopefully, the women, Chris, this time get equal time to the men because, again, last time was an absolute joke. But also, look, I'm fine with calling the tournaments King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring. What's odd is WWE actually has a perfectly good event name for Saudi Arabia, Crown Jewel. You can call the event Crown Jewel and have the tournaments within be King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring. So, I mean, I digress from the entire thing, but wouldn't that make more sense?
Well, I assume they're also going to do Crown Jewel. I mean, last year
they renamed that, make that something
I think
else,
they did. You know? I think they did Knight of Champions and Crown Jewel, or whatever.
They did. So this was scheduled for last year, and then they realized, hey, Roman Reigns is going to hit 1,000 days, so let's change it to Knight of Champions. That's what happened a year ago.
Yeah. So they announced this at WrestleMania, and a lot of the crowd in person in Philadelphia booed the announcement. So just wanted to note that.
They booed because it was Saudi Arabia. I heard they also booed the tourism thing for Saudi Arabia.
They booed the tourism thing. They booed that. So just worth noting out there that there are a lot of WWE fans who don't just eat up the Saudi Arabia propaganda like some people online seem to think. So good to have it back. I'm fine with it being the name of the pay-per-view. That's what it was when I was a kid. So it all works for me. Excited.
Well,
it was
King of the Ring when we were kids.
Right.
It's a little clunky, King and Queen of the Ring. I mean,
it's whatever, but it's still cool to have it back. Also notable doing the SmackDown there, as typically they've pre-recorded the SmackDown and played it on tape. So that's a bit of a change, too.
It is true. Triple H made it sound during an interview last week like he actually made Nick Khan and TKO convince him to stay after the merger, because he basically said he wanted to have fun and do things right, and they needed to promise him as much if he was going to stick with them. I would love to explore that more, but the idea that he was even thinking about not sticking around to me is wild, yet completely understandable given the change in corporate structure and everything else.
It is wild to kind of think about that and then think about the multiple thank you, Hunter, thank you, Paul chants we got this weekend. So he stayed, and he very much leaned into it being about him. Now that's the behind the scenes kayfabe breaking documentary I would like to see.
Well, talk about throwing it on the table. Like, you weren't sure whether you were going to stay. They convinced you to, and then you get people chanting your name and thanking you on the Raw after WrestleMania. That's where you throw it down and say, okay, give me more of that stock. Give me more control. Give me more money. Hopefully he's getting some of it, Paul Levesque. There was a concerted effort, Chris, throughout WrestleMania weekend to use the terms professional wrestling and wrestling, and instead of sports entertainment, I frequently heard sports and entertainment. That latter term, I want to tell everyone, will continue to be used to refer to WWE. But the in-ring product is also going to be called what it is, pro wrestling. I saw some people reporting this as if it was groundbreaking news. I guess in the world of WWE, it is to a degree, but it's a simple relaxing of the term and hammering home the fact that WWE does both. It performs wrestling, like sports, and it entertains. Basically, it was not about to allow anyone else, AEW namely, to suggest that they do wrestling and WWE does not, which was always horseshit, but it was a contention that a lot of people bought into. And I actually kind of think it's smart to make this pivot.
I agree. And you're right. It has been going on for a while, for a bit. I mean, we have the drop from Drew McIntyre saying we're wrestlers in a ring. Let's freaking wrestle. I mean, ever since Vince left, there's been little bits of this. Cody Rhodes, when he came back to the company, said wrestling. Then he would say wrestling and sports entertainment. So he's kind of been blending the two. So this is really is just a further continuation of what we've been getting under Triple H. But nothing made that more clear than Cole, you know, partly closing out WrestleMania by saying, I freaking love professional wrestling. You know, like that made it more clear than anything we've had before.
Indeed. Roman Reigns posted a video of himself already angrily working out. He did this on Tuesday saying it was day one, I guess, presumably of his comeback. But the fact that he posted so soon was something I did not expect. I thought he was going to be radio silent for, you know, 6 months before we saw him again, Chris.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. Like it was a nothing video, but I don't know. I kind of would have rather had nothing. Keep it totally radio silent. Don't know where he is. Don't know what he's doing. Don't know what he's thinking. And then he comes back. So whatever. It's whatever.
So SmackDown and Raw. So the SmackDown before WrestleMania and obviously the Raw after WrestleMania. They both did their best ratings and demos since 2020 for Raw. The best since February and January 2020, respectively. The opening segment of Raw peaked at 3.2 million viewers and a 1.1 demo, which is astronomical. I mean, these shows were sometimes approaching 0.7. It did 1.1. Those are numbers that SmackDown has not been able to hit on broadcast TV, and yet Raw was able to do it on cable. Absolute insanity. SmackDown this Friday is sold out. That's going to be 18 straight. I believe the next couple are already close. I believe they're going to tie their record at a minimum. And like I said, I think they're looking for 25 or 30 straight sellouts. This is a wild situation right now.
It's big. You know, The Rock being gone now could make that a little bit tougher on the attendance point. But curious to see how things move forward, because it was an okay Raw, but the headline of Raw was Rock going away. So can they continue the momentum of WrestleMania? A lot of times WWE will kind of go into a lull afterward and not continue the momentum of people tuning in for the first time in a while. So curious to see what we get on SmackDown and then moving forward.
By the way, we did have a conversation on the last show Tuesday about like how Raw after WrestleMania was way, way, way better than last year, but it wasn't necessarily the best of all time. I did go back and I looked at the results from like the last five Raw after WrestleManias, and this was the best out of all of them. Like, this was the best Raw after WrestleMania in, I think, a lot longer than we can remember.
I guess I'd have to look back and think. I don't know.
The pandemic, Chris, one of the pandemic Raws after WrestleMania. I mean, sorry, the pandemic Raw after WrestleMania.
Let me just remind you. I mean,
no, I'm just saying. No. But let me remind you. This is the reason I'm saying it. The one after Drew McIntyre won the title, it ended with the debut of Retribution.
Oh, yeah. And is that the one that like opened with him beating the Big Show?
Yes.
From the night before?
Yes. Yeah. So like, I'm just saying, I know that one obviously was going to be terrible no matter what. And yet it was even like worse when you remember Retribution. So I think we were, you know, slightly critical of this Raw after WrestleMania because it wasn't totally explosive. Like, it didn't fully capitalize. But you know what? I think it was a lot better than both of you and I even thought, and both of us gave it like an A- B plus anyway. So I just wanted to put that out there. This was reported elsewhere, but Getting Over has confirmed WWE is planning to stick with the smaller TV sets as long as their ticket sales don't slow. So in other words, until they no longer need to stop opening additional seats for shows, they're going to go with the smaller sets. The idea is, hey, if they cool down a little bit post-WrestleMania, they'll bring back the stages and they'll still continue their sellout streak. At some point, they won't, but they're going to try to sell as many tickets as they possibly can for every single show until that no longer becomes possible. And whether it's a small set or a large set, a sellout is a sellout if the vast majority of tickets for a particular setup are gone, even if a stage is in place. Now, Chris, I don't necessarily mind the aesthetic of the smaller sets per se, but I do miss the way that certain entrances look with the bigger sets. Examples, Jade Cargill and The Rock. Now, obviously, The Rock's not going to be around, but the pageantry, the pyro, some of those things, you don't really get them. You don't get them at all in many cases with the smaller set. I feel like there's probably a happy medium where they can maximize ticket sales, but also allow talent to enter on a raised platform. Maybe something, do you remember like the old Raw is War sets? They were very minimal, big screen in the middle, two small screens on the side, raised up, but not so much that it hurt ticket sales. if I was WWE, I would invest in something, an intermediate type of set, because what they have now, in many cases, just it doesn't feel as big as WWE should feel.
Well, are we talking what they had for SmackDown and Raw when there's basically no entrance? Or are we talking about what they had in Chicago a couple weeks ago when it was like the house show set?
I think it depends on the arena.
Yeah, the house show set still gives you enough for an entrance.
It's better.
That's where the Rock had his really cool entrance.
Yes,
actually. So
correct.
I guess I'll just have to wait and see which ones they exactly give us. But you're right. I mean, the Tron has been a part of WWE for 25 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so. That's interesting. I guess we'll kind of see how it is moving forward.
Now, Jacob Fatu has reportedly signed with WWE for a familial reference. He's the son of Samu Fatu, cousins of the Usos. He was trained by his uncle Rikishi. So similar to Booker T, he was arrested for armed robbery at a young age, I believe 18. He returned to wrestling when he got out. And for those of you who have never seen him wrestle, he's primarily been in MLW. He's kind of incredible. Like, he's a high-flying big man, almost like a mix of Solo Sikoa and Keith Lee, if you shoved them together when he was on the independents. Like I said, he spent parts of the last 6 years in MLW. It was only a matter of time before he joined WWE. It was mentioned over WrestleMania weekend that he was telling people he had signed, and therefore everyone expected that he would be part of WrestleMania. He would interfere in the main event, something like that. Obviously, that did not happen. No idea what the plan is for him. I would love to see him and Solo like connect as a reincarnated Samoan SWAT team or something to that degree, but he's a big deal and he's a pretty significant signing. Not in that he gives WWE something it doesn't have already, more just that he's a immense talent and it's going to be super interesting to see him on WWE television. I think he probably starts in NXT, but I'm just not sure. Chris, I don't know if you have a lot of knowledge or experience with Jacob Fatu, but figured I would give you an opportunity here.
I have no knowledge and frankly wish I didn't know that this had happened, unless he's going to pop up in NXT. If he's going to immediately come to the main roster for some reason, I kind of wish it would have been more of a surprise, but
yeah,
now I know.
Sorry. I don't know what the plan is, but it was big enough news that obviously is what we're talking about. Now, look, as we have been telling you, was coming for months on buymeacoffee.com/gettingover, Julia has indeed signed with WWE. It was solidified this past weekend at WrestleMania. Obviously, she was shown in the crowd during NXT Stand and Deliver, despite not being announced as signed at that time. It's not tough, though, to put two and two together. She is apparently, reportedly, clear to start immediately. She does have some dates in Japan that she's going to do. She also wants to get acclimated to the United States, I was told. And she did stay in the U.S. after Mania a couple extra days. She did not immediately return to Japan. I heard she was in Florida on Tuesday, but I'm not 1,000% sure about that. But Julia is a big-time stardom talent. Again, someone totally worth Googling, watching a couple matches over. We've talked about her briefly on the show previously. Just wanted to mention it. And on that note, Tokyo Sports interviewed the former head of Stardom, Rossi Agawa. And he basically said he's going to have an announcement about his new promotion coming this week. Now, he was coming off a trip alongside Julia to WrestleMania, and he was wearing a WrestleMania sweatshirt in the Japanese airport. He said it was a productive visit with WWE. There is some speculation that WWE might be financing a Japanese promotion, a women's promotion in particular. Some are talking about it being NXT Japan. You know, it does seem like that prospect had gone by the wayside. But again, we just don't know what's going to happen. The expectation is it's going to get announced before the end of this week. Well, guess what? There's only like 24 hours left in this week. So we'll see what happens. Chris, I don't know if you have any thoughts on either of these, but of course, again, wanted to give you the opportunity.
I've not seen Julia, but I've heard really good things about her from smart people. So that is exciting and not surprising. The NXT Japan idea, we know Triple H talked about that before the pandemic. They had, they had like Mexico and some other ideas all in the works that didn't happen. And then the 2.0 thing happened. So NXT kind of changed. Wouldn't be surprising if Triple H is going back to his original global NXT, you know, idea. As for the guy potentially running it, is this the guy that Tony Khan seemed to not like and was glad was gone?
Yes. Tony's belief is that he was preventing AEW from working with Stardom. Well, I mean, I guess he was preventing him from doing that, but he thinks he had like an agenda out against him and so on and so forth. So yes, he tweeted, you know, goodbye, Rossi, or like whatever he said, some idiotic, childish thing on Twitter, celebrating a guy losing his job. But to be fair, he lost his job because allegedly he was trying to poach talent out of the company. So he was doing something that was deserving of being fired, but still him celebrating it was odd, I guess is the best way to put it.
There you go.
Damian Priest got a chance to hang out with Aaron Judge of the Yankees. And the only reason I mention that is because I'm a huge Yankees fan and I'm a Priest fan. So that was pretty cool to see that. At least according to NXT, Josh Briggs suffered two fractured ribs in the meat match with Obafemi and Dijak from NXT Stand and Deliver. That's massively disappointing for him because he could have otherwise capitalized on his momentum pretty quickly. But usually fractured ribs heal rather quickly, so he shouldn't be out for too long. And lastly, NXT is bringing Spring Breakin' back as a two-week special beginning April 23rd. That's 2 weeks and 3 weeks out, respectively. So that wraps up the WWE news, I want to say from the week, but that's just a portion of it. Like I said, we have so much more to talk about. We will go over that on Tuesday. Chris, let's go ahead and talk about the WWE Hall of Fame, which we did not really have a chance to discuss at all coming out of WrestleMania weekend. Let's do some notes on top, and then we'll go ahead person by person here. So Keith Lee was actually shown backstage. He was trying to avoid a camera, but he got caught during the pre-show. Ken Shamrock was in attendance. There's been a groundswell of support to get him back around WWE and in the WWE Hall of Fame. Maybe this was a first step. Stephanie McMahon was shown on screen for the first time since she left WWE. Now, this was a big deal, and I thought we were going to have the whole conversation about it, except she showed up WrestleMania 40 Night 2, and we already talked about her. But at the Hall of Fame, she was wearing a black and gold leather ECW Kangol hat. True GOAT stuff. Awesome callback to the one she used to wear back during the Alliance storyline in WWE. The setup of this I thought was super strange. A ton of legends were sitting in front of the set where they could not see the ring because there were dozens of rows of fans in front of them. Now, I presume they just looked up at the arena boards, but one would think that you would treat the legends better, put them on risers. It looked super odd. Did you have the same thought watching this?
So I've never really been a fan of doing the Hall of Fame in the arena the way they do it now, like as part of the SmackDown, you know, mm-hmm. It used to be its own thing, and especially it looked really, really nice. And now because WrestleMania is two nights, they got to cram things together. And like, I get it. And they've like tweaked with it every year since to try like figure out what the best way to do it was. Sometimes they kept the ropes up, sometimes not. And so this was like, okay, I was up top, very top of the arena, so I couldn't tell what their view on the floor was. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe you like completely take down the ring, you put seats up where the ring would be, and they look up toward the ramp and the screen where someone does the speech. I don't know what the answer is. But clearly, they keep tweaking it to try to... It was better this year, I think, than it had been in some years past, but still a little bit awkward.
Yeah. Also, every mention of WWF was bleeped live on Peacock while this was
Oh, really? Ongoing. I didn't know that.
Yeah, every single one. So look, I had a full long breakdown of Paul Heyman's speech written out. I'm going to assume that everyone who was not planning on watching it initially has ultimately done so just because of how epic it was. So instead of breaking down the whole speech, I'm just going to give you some brief comments, okay? So Heyman opened it, and despite being the headliner, he kicked off the show, which surprised me at first, but it did actually make sense as the night progressed. The highlight package did not include Brock Lesnar. Roman Reigns looked great wearing a suit for the introduction. He really needs to dress better when he returns to TV. Reigns put Heyman over as the greatest communicator. He called him a mensch. Hearing him drop Yiddish was completely unexpected. Reigns also said the moment Heyman is not his wise man, you'll never see the tribal chief again. And Chris, that got me thinking. Like, we've been talking about a babyface Roman Reigns one day. A babyface Paul Heyman alongside him would be absolutely incredible if it transpired.
Have we ever had a babyface Paul Heyman?
He's had babyface turns, but I don't think he's ever been pure, unadulterated babyface.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, he's like had bits with Eric Bischoff from time to time, I know, but right. Yeah, it would be interesting.
It'd be crazy, right? So look, Roman is not an order. He did well. Thankfully, Heyman got to enter to the ECW theme. He got loud chants. Rob Van Dam, Tommy Dreamer, and Bubba Dudley were there. He had an extra long hug with Dreamer. Dawn Marie was on WWE TV for, I think, the first time since 2005. She sued them because they fired her while she was pregnant. Fans chanted, "You deserve it." Heyman replied, "You're damn fucking right I deserve it." He mimicked RVD and his son Jacob smoking joints and said he was going to go off the cuff. He scoffed at the sports entertainment term for professional wrestling and was honored to be the first ever Hall of Famer chosen by Triple H. And he said, quote, "The leadership that was sorely needed by the men and women in this beautiful performance art has been bestowed upon us by Paul Levesque." And he said, quote, For the rest of my life, I will be a Paul Levesque guy. He also said he hopes his daughter grows up to be half the woman Stephanie is. This, Chris, was such an incredible repudiation of Vince McMahon. We saw it happen all week after this, but this moment in particular was really like the opening salvo of tearing apart what WWE had become under Vince across the last decade plus. And there was no better person to do it than Heyman, who has certainly had his share of misdeeds, but was also victimized and held down by McMahon numerous times over the years. This was one of those moments that you expect to see when someone leaves WWE, not when they get put into the WWE Hall of Fame. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and let's not forget, I mean, Vince and WWF did help ECW back in the day. I mean, it's not like Paul Heyman doesn't owe anything to Vince.
Absolutely.
He does. So, but you're right, this was the biggest and first clear repudiation of what we were going to get hit over the head with over the next couple of days, which was New Era. And I'm glad Heyman framed it as the men and women in this company who need leadership, mm-hmm. you know, like to talk about it at the human level, which was what was needed. So that was really important. He did, by the way, do this entire speech without the teleprompter. I was seated behind him, so you could see the teleprompter for everybody else. He had nothing. It was just like a one red line of just go. So he really did this entire thing off the cuff. He may have had some notes, I couldn't tell, but there was that. Also, at the beginning, Roman was getting a little bit heckled early on, and some mm-hmm. people were. We could not hear very well in the arena, and so you'd get people yelling, "We can't hear it." Well, we heard Heyman fine because he was yelling and doing right. his thing. But a lot of the other people were very quiet for the people in the arena.
Well, Roman doesn't really, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? He doesn't vocalize that way usually. He's much of a lower talker. So that's interesting, though. That is part of the reason why that happened. So after that, this immediately got emotional to the point that Paul literally turned around to the other side of the podium. And after saying he wished his father was there to see it, he told Cody Rhodes he wished Dusty was there to see it, too. Heyman then, on a dime, turned into Paulie Dangerously to talk ECW. He put on the leather trench coat, headset, cell phone, and hat, and his attitude immediately turned. I'm not going to repeat every single word of what he said because I could not dream of doing it justice. But the best line was this: "If you think the spirit of ECW died in a bankruptcy court in 2001, you can suck my fucking dick." And I'm going to play it for you because even that did not do it justice.
"If you think that the spirit of ECW died in a bankruptcy court in 2001, you can suck my fucking dick."
The crowd straight up exploded. He said that shit on Peacock. There's a video from a fan that showed amazing reactions from the wrestlers. Cody and Brandy leaned over to see Triple H's reaction like he was a father who was about to get angry. Randy Orton immediately stood up and lost his mind. He started pounding on the ring, hysterical. Miz and Andrade died laughing. Jimmy literally covered Naomi's ears like she was a child. Drew McIntyre, it took him like a second for it to register, he flipped out, and then Grayson Waller obviously loved it in a Grayson Waller way. Heyman talked about getting canceled from one job, finding another over and over again. He mentioned Brock Lesnar by name, yelled it, in fact, and then circled to being rescued by Reigns as his wise man. He shouted out Braun Breaker, Rhea Ripley, Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams, Jade Cargill, all as up-and-comers, plus a bunch of the current roster. He wrapped by doing a trio of introductions for Brock Lesnar, CM Punk, and Roman Reigns, and he promised he was going to continue disrupting the industry. And Chris, this was simply the greatest Hall of Fame speech of all time, any sport. I know there have been some great Pro Football Hall of Fame ones. There's been some pretty damn good Naismith Hall of Fame ones as well. But the fact that Heyman did this extemporaneously is wild. I have never seen a speech put over so many people, past, present, and future. I was crying, laughing, just having an absolute blast from the opening syllable to the final exclamation. I marked out so hard for this. Every layer made it better and better. Heyman is the greatest orator in professional wrestling history. He's the legitimate goat on the mic in every definition of the term. This was epic, unmatched. He deserved to open, but it was also impossible for anyone else to follow him. What an absolutely incredible moment. I will watch this speech so many times, but I need a fully uncensored version. It has to exist somewhere. WWE needs to post it somewhere, maybe when they get to Netflix.
I was going to ask, so was that all bleeped during the
Every single thing was bleeped. I did obviously just play the uncensored one-liner, but that came from in-arena audio. Someone's shot it online. Everything was bleeped, yeah.
Okay, because it was wild to hear in person.
I'm sure.
The crowd obviously popped huge for everything like that. And I love the way he ended it by basically saying, like, he's not going anywhere. Like, he is still going to keep being involved in wrestling and that type of stuff. And, you know, when it's Hall of Fame and you figure Roman's going to lose this weekend, you start to wonder, hey, could Paul Heyman maybe retire soon? And it sounded like he didn't. So that was interesting. The Brock stuff was extremely notable. I mean, for the people who don't understand the Brock situation, he was, the Wall Street Journal reported, he was believed to be a wrestler that Vince McMahon offered Janelle Grant to as an incentive to re-sign for the company, like for sexual favors. And there was bad weather and it didn't end up happening. And since then, there has been no Brock on WWE. There's obviously didn't include him in the video. Triple H was asked after night one, said his status has not changed, but obviously it has a little bit if he's not going to be in the freaking video. So Heyman clearly, you know, by saying Brock Lesnar is not something that WWE wanted, but still did that. And it was incredible. It was an unbelievable speech. Right up there with Mr. T talking about his mom, mm-hmm. For sure. The only issue I had with the speech was talking about canceling. Like,
yeah, he does.
That's
that
not
sometimes.
The right. That's yeah. That's not the definition of being canceled. He really leaned it. He could have just said fired or,
when he's,
or
so when
controversial
he started,
or whatever. Like
when
that.
He started saying it, I was like, is he about to do a whole like woke thing here?
And yeah, he got very close to that.
But then when he finished, I was like, oh, okay, I see what he was going for. And he's done that sometimes. You know, I'm not here to judge his politics or anything. I don't know. I think sometimes he leans into popular phraseology and right. doesn't necessarily mean it in the way that it's uttered, but he does it to get a pop and get a reaction. That right. is why I think he used that term here.
Yeah, no, he just used it incorrectly.
Yeah.
It basically yeah. is what it was. It was... So that was just because he said it several times in a row. And I'm like, oh, I get what you're saying. But the wording you're using is kind of taking me out this right. at the moment. You didn't get canceled at ECW.
I paused.
That's not what it was.
Yeah, I paused. But, also. I felt the same way.
Yeah. So, but I mean, other than that, it was an incredible speech, standing ovation. It was everything you could have hoped for and more.
Yeah.
And something that would not have happened under Vince. And I think the recognition for Triple H there, Paul Heyman doing this, was further emphasis heading into the weekend that it is a new era.
So I'm going to run through the next three. And obviously, if you have anything to say on the back end, you can. Bull Nakano, it was impossible to follow Heyman, but throwing Medusa Alundra Blaze out there was not the move. Always a rough promo. Bull was great. She did really well, despite not being an English speaker. Got a ton of respect from the crowd. Multiple talents put her over before and around the Hall of Fame. Not just the women, a ton of men as well. At the end, Nakano said she hoped to get back in the ring in WWE. At 56, I'm not sure that's happening, but man, if they could run a storyline with her where she managed some people, that would be pretty cool, and it would be epic to see that in 2024. US Express, Taylor, and Micah Rotunda did the introduction of their father and uncle. It started and ended with acknowledgments of Bray Wyatt and thousands of Fireflies, but really nothing else notable. Thunderbolt Patterson, New Day did an introduction in their signature style. There was a really sweet moment where Patterson got out of his wheelchair to embrace Jerry Briscoe for an extended period. Presumably they just hadn't seen each other probably in decades.
Yeah.
I knew what he did from like a pioneering standpoint. I did not realize how many wrestlers he actually influenced. His video package, at least as far as I was concerned, was the best video package on the entire show. The rest of it, unfortunately, was kind of rough. He rambled. He repeated himself a bit. His intentions were obviously good. He wanted to do a prayer and share some personal thoughts, but it was like,
Yeah. He, you know, he was an old guy, kind of rambled for a bit there, but Big E and all of the New Day, like you could see the influences of him mm-hmm. in the New Day and in a lot of different wrestlers. And you're right. I did not realize just how important he was. So honoring him like that is a great way to educate the current generation of fans. You know, I didn't know much about him coming into this and now I do. And so that was important. Well, Bull Nakano would have been, she could have come out with Damage Control or something like that. It would have been
cool.
Would have been a cool little thing, but glad she was honored. Everybody here made sense. It was a really solid class.
Now we're going to talk about Muhammad Ali and Leah Maivia together, because there was a beautiful video package for Ali Then The Undertaker did his introduction. They covered all the WWE and wrestling related elements of Ali. Stuff I knew, but I saw a lot of people learned, like how he was inspired by Gorgeous George, the Gorilla Monsoon angle in Philadelphia, him being so integral in the marking of WrestleMania 1, all that stuff. He was also honored, of course, for being a great boxer, the greatest of all time, and being a humanitarian and social justice fighter. His wife, Lonnie, did the speech. And at the end, she presented Dwayne Johnson with that literal People's Championship that you have since seen on WWE television. It's actually a pretty good looking belt, as we mentioned, other than the huge Brahma Bull in the middle. And then the show closed with Dwayne inducting his grandmother. And I'm not quite sure what happened here. A subsection of fans were treating him like the final boss Rock instead of a real guy inducting his grandmother. And I can't tell whether he noticed and fed into that, like going away from what he was planning to do, or whether it was always the plan to just continue the story with Cody through the Hall of Fame like WWE did with Rey and Dominic Mysterio last year. But Chris, I cannot be the only one who felt like WWE / The Rock made two of six, I think, introductions about The Rock.
Like, yeah.
Rather than, you know, his own grandmother. Like, some argued she shouldn't have even been inducted. That's bullshit. She deserved to be inducted. But she also deserved the ceremony to be about her. And it just came off awkward and kind of self-serving to me.
So we talked about the Rock Ali belt stuff, both during the WrestleMania shows and Tuesday show. It's nonsense. It's bizarre. It's a Rock belt. WWE obviously had that commissioned. It was extremely weird to make it about the Rock because I think people lost the Ali connections with WWE. In fact, a lot of the talk about Ali was about his boxing success. And I'm like, what does this have to do with the WWE Hall of Fame? Are we just inducting good? Like, there was
Rock's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you know,
right. But there was not enough about what Ali has done for WWE and vice versa. That connection. That's what I wanted to get more of. Instead, we got boxing stuff, a little bit of WWE stuff, and then Rock stuff. It was weird. And then I'll tell you, I think because Paul Heyman opened the show, a lot of us in the arena thought we were going to get an angle to close the show, a Cody Rock confrontation of some kind. So I think we were already like on edge, and it was late. It was really late.
It was late.
And we were like on edge thinking, okay, the reason Heyman went first is we're going to get a big Cody Rock thing. And so we're like in that mindset. And so we're treating the Rock like the final boss because he's been doing a really good job with that. Also worth noting in the Rock speech, about his grandmother, he mentioned Vince McMahon among the talent, among the promoters who would send talent to his grandmother. The crowd booed at the mention of Vince. I don't know. I don't know if that came through the TV or not.
It did.
So it's notable. And yeah, so it was a lot of Rock. And I think a lot of us just felt like he's leaning into the character of being a board member and getting what he wants. And so it kind of felt like that's why his grandmother went in, even though that's not the case. Just in the context of his character, you know, it was a different dynamic, especially because it closed the show.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And it was just odd. And the whole way it was done is odd. Long conversation, but let's do it in a short window here. Chris, what would you do with the WWE Hall of Fame? I think they need to move it off of doing it post-SmackDown. Put it on Thursday, do it at WWE World, sell tickets, make it part of the day, something like that.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, you know, that's an extra day early. Everybody needs to get in and whatnot. But it's tough. It was really, really late. And this wasn't even a long class. Really, it wasn't a big class by any means. But the speeches did go on and on. And as it went on, I realized, oh, the reason Heyman went first is because he's the keynote and he's the one people want to see. And it ain't going to work if it's 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, and he's up there. So, yeah. That, or if you can start SmackDown like an hour earlier or something like that.
I don't think they will be able to on USA Network.
Yeah, in fact, USA Network on Fridays.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. If they when they move to USA, they might be able to do 7 to 9 and then do this after the fact. That could work. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my only thought. I mean, like I said earlier, I love when it was its own thing and you got the full nice stage and it felt like a real award show. But also those shows went on forever.
They did.
Those are really long. They're actually shorter now.
The format's actually better. It's just the timing after SmackDown is tough. Yeah.
It is. So I'm not sure what the answer is other than maybe moving it up if you can. But yeah.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk about Bray Wyatt becoming immortal. Now, Chris, butt in anytime you know, I say something that you want to address. I'm just going to roll through it, though, just because we do have a little bit of limited time on today's show. So I know most or at least many siblings have close relationships. I say this, of course, as an only child. What struck me throughout this documentary was how loving and emotional the relationship was between Bray, Bo Dallas, Taylor, and their sister, Micah. You could feel that emotion through the screen. And like, given the way we've heard all of his wrestler friends talk about him, it's clear that Bray was a guy with like a legitimately good soul who just meant so much to so many people.
Yeah, we never got the Bray Bo Dallas on screen dynamic, you know, and to see Taylor talk about him like that was like, man, I wish we could have had the more. And we obviously did almost get that, sort of get that at the end, but he really, really, really were close. The whole, all the siblings, you could definitely get that sense coming in.
Paul Levesque repeated here what he said prior to Bray Wyatt being re-signed, which is that as much as Bray was a genius, it was difficult to translate his ideas and creative pitches to the wrestling ring. And there was a level of conflict with him, always wanting everything done his way because it was creative control over a character that was birthed out of his own mind, right? And it was amazing to me that in a 2-hour documentary, the first hour was basically his entire life and the majority of his career. And the second half was pretty much going over the creative development of The Fiend and then everything that ensued from that until present. The behind the scenes of the Firefly Funhouse match was incredible. I could watch an hour documentary just on that. I kept saying, I want more of this. I want more of this. A making of Firefly Funhouse match. I mean, I think everyone would watch that. It would be ridiculously good.
Yeah. Yeah. The pacing of everything in the doc was interesting. They put a ton of time into The Fiend. And I was like, was The Fiend that big? I was like trying to remember. I was like, to me, when I think of Bray Wyatt, the Bray Wyatt I think of is the Swamp cult leader. Mm-hmm. I still go back to the first one. It's not Fiend, but they put a lot into
The Fiend was enormous though. It was so popular, dude.
It was. It really was. It just didn't. My brother loved it a ton. I guess in my head, it just didn't stick with me as much when I think about Bray. Yeah. I was surprised how much they talked about the inability to just the difficulties working with Bray sometimes on getting stuff on that's in his mind on TV. And like Triple H straight says, he's like, he has all these ideas, but how does that translate to a wrestling ring? You know, like I was surprised that they kind of got into that.
I liked that they were just honest about it. Cause
yeah, no,
it was factual. No, and you could tell as soon as The Fiend and the Firefly Funhouse, you know, Mr. Rogers character, as soon as they had to wrestle, I'm not saying it fell apart, but it went from like perfect and incredible to, oh, okay, well, it's flawed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I think they didn't include the Bray, Seth Rollins, Hell in a Cell debacle.
They did not. They did not.
It was not because Fiend won the championship. They did not show that.
Yeah, they kind of cut that out for sure.
So, but it was a really, I think, good and honest look at everything in his WWE career. Yeah. So credit to WWE for that. I will say, speaking of the Firefly Funhouse, I love that behind the scenes stuff that we got. But a big part of me is looking at this thinking like nobody's wearing masks because this was right at COVID. However, this was literally right when it started and we didn't even have masks the time. So like it was like that weird brief period. I hadn't thought about it, so it was just interesting to see. And that was good. Bray getting actually burned in that Inferno match with Randy Orton was crazy. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. And it looked like a pain in the butt to deal with all that burned Fiend costume. I'd forgotten about that.
And how bad of a decision that was, too. Because the new costume that he had to wear, he couldn't move with it.
Yeah.
They didn't test it out. Like, that whole deal. That was crazy, too. Yeah, it was definitely nuts. So, I also got legitimate chills watching back Bray's return at Extreme Rules. I hadn't seen it in 2 years. Just forgot how incredible that was as a moment. We knew it anyway, but Bo Dallas, of course, was confirmed to be Uncle Howdy the entire time. The end of the doc showed that Bray had one final creation, a new Fiend with a new Fiend masked lantern. And they also show the entire costume, every intricate detail of it. The story of his death was devastating. Like, he was just a week earlier. He was told just a week earlier that he needed to wear a vest that could shock his heart if necessary. He saw the doctor the morning of his passing, learned that he would most likely need a pacemaker. He was planning to pick up his kids from school that day, decided to take a nap, but did not wear the vest. And then JoJo found him unresponsive. The funeral looked beautiful. And that part for me was just truly crushing. To see all that got emotional. I bet a lot of fans watching it did as well. The last extended sequence, including Bo saying his fire and passion for wrestling burns the brightest now because he wants to carry his brother's legacy onward. And then the last scene after the credits showed the lantern flickering back on with Uncle Howdy suddenly standing behind it. Now, that could have been done because it just looked cool. But number one, Bo remains under contract. Number two, the fans will pop for it if he returns. And number three, there seemed to be White Rabbit style teases beginning Monday night on Raw. There was an odd song that played briefly in the arena off of TV. There was a noticeable glitch during a Bronson Reed backstage promo. So, Chris, I ask you this. Are you down for an Uncle Howdy solo run with Bo doing it?
I did not see the post-credit flicker there, so that's news to me. I did see clips of the stuff going on during Raw. I would love for Bo to, I guess, come back. So he is under contract under WWE?
He is, yes.
You said?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that. Cause it's. I guess if he was originally for the Uncle Howdy, I don't know. Coming back as Uncle Howdy, I don't know, man. I did not care for the Uncle Howdy stuff when Bray came back.
They never really got into it, though. They only was tip of the iceberg on it.
They did bits and pieces, and you and I on this podcast started to say, I think I'm pretty sure I said, I don't care about this.
Oh, yes.
Weeks and weeks and weeks of
good.
Nothing.
Yeah,
weeks good. And weeks of nothing happening. And so, I don't know. Like, it is weird. Like, to me, I keep forgetting that Bray Wyatt's dead, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I just think he's, like, on a hiatus and he'll show up on Raw the next day. Like, I just haven't fully, like, accepted it, I guess. And watching this documentary, I had the same feeling. Like, it just, I don't know. So it's absolutely true that his legacy and everything he did certainly lives on. Absolutely. I'd love for Bo Dallas Taylor to come back, be part of the show. I don't know if it's Uncle Howdy, though, because we just talked about in the documentary about how difficult it is to do that stuff in pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. At the same time, remember, Dusty Rhodes dies. Cody Rhodes stays as Stardust. They don't bring him back as Cody. They didn't lean into Dusty's death as something for Cody. It appears they're going to potentially lean into Bray's death for Bo. I don't know what to do. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what to do with Bo Dallas. I'll give it a shot. But we've been through Fiend, Uncle Howdy stuff several times, and it just didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
By the way, just keep an eye out for April 22nd. That's going to be the 5-year anniversary of the debut of Firefly Funhouse. Just saying, it's a longer conversation, probably for another day. Lastly, Undertaker narrating it was perfect. And he read that famous Bray tweet about wrestling to wrap it up. Everything was executed well. It was emotional. Perfect documentary. And it was great that there were multiple Firefly moments at WrestleMania. I'm so glad they did it. They promoted the documentary, are making sure people saw it. And of course, like I said, got to do the Firefly moment at a tentpole WrestleMania event, which was just really, really cool.
And I'm glad there's a close relationship with the family for this. You know, sometimes a wrestler dies, there's bad blood for whatever reason, stuff in the past, but US Express getting inducted, Bo still being involved, using JoJo for the documentary. Like, I hope at least it seemed to be that the company and the family are on good terms and that they really did celebrate Bray with this documentary.
Now, I thank Chris, obviously, for joining us for that extended part of the show. He does not watch NXT, so I will, of course, be tackling that on my own. I will note before I get to that, I did watch WWE Speed on Wednesday. JD McDonagh beat Axiom with a kind of strange finish. McDonagh dodged Golden Ratio. Axiom avoided Devil Inside and hit a knee, but McDonagh just headbutted him and fell on top of him for the win in like 2 minutes and 24 seconds. So he fights Ricochet in the next round, which you'll remember we recently saw on Raw. The other part of the bracket is Johnny Gargano against Angel. There's really no improvements from the presentation we saw a week ago. We discussed that on Tuesday's podcast, by the way, so you can go back and listen to that. But that said, let's go ahead and move over to NXT. Now, in terms of an NXT stand and deliver second look, I did get to rewatch some of it, but didn't really have anything to add or change from my opinions watching it live, which shocks me because of how chaotic that day felt to me. It might have been a tad high on the Roxanne Perez-Lyra Valkyria match because it did start slow, but As I explained then, it was purposeful because Roxy was playing heel. So let's just go ahead and talk about what happened on Tuesday. Trick Williams entered for the main event of NXT and put over the crowd for fueling him to victory. He turned it saying he'd never have been in this position without Carmelo Hayes, saying, indeed, he is him. Trick said Bayley and Cody Rhodes finished their stories and his next chapter is becoming NXT champion. The only way he can get to the next level in his career is, of course, by taking down Ilya Dragunov. So the champion came out only to deny Williams' requests. He said, you're not going to get another title shot. You've tried. You failed. That's it. He said it's only fair for someone else to get a shot. Trick asked, well, what do I need to do and who do I need to beat to make it happen? So Ilya agreed only on the condition that Trick leaves NXT if he loses. Williams said if he can't beat him for the title, he doesn't belong there, so he accepted the match. After they shook hands, Carmelo Hayes ran in, attacking Trick from behind, pushing him into Ilya, and then stomping a mud hole in Williams' ass. Melo grabbed the title, held it over him, and said Trick wouldn't make it to Spring Breakin' because he's going to beat his ass in a steel cage next week. So this is a lot to digest. It was a lot to digest simply from Ilya to go from a firm no 1 minute to a yes 90 seconds later with a stipulation he just conjured up out of thin air. He doesn't hate Trick, so there's really no reason for him to put a stipulation on it where Williams leaves NXT if he loses. Just completely unnecessary to do that. The Melo attack on its own made sense, but given Trick has a title match already set, we already know the outcome of both of these matches. And given Dragunov already debuted on Raw, plus the fact that Williams is not going to leave NXT or get called up to the main roster because he's way too green for that, then we already know the outcome there too. This just felt like a patchwork storyline from Shawn Michaels because Triple H probably decided he was calling up Dragunov and potentially Hayes as well. So basically, Trick, despite being green still, gets to take out two top guys and send them out of NXT while becoming champion on the back end. It's not necessarily bad booking, but it was convoluted, and it's a big push to give a guy who is still nowhere near ready for, you know, the main roster. Now, you can make him the top guy in NXT, and that's fine, but you're having him beat Hayes and Dragunov in back-to-back weeks, and then that's 1 week after he already beat Hayes the first time? That's a lot, and it seems like it's a bit too much. Roxanne Perez opened the show with Booker T effusively praising her on commentary, and he should be doing that, of course, because he helped train her. Fans chanted, "You deserve it." Roxy told them to shut up. She bragged about taking advantage of Lyra Valkyrie's injured arm, saying the only way she won't be champion is if she has to give up the title when she gets drafted. Lyra entered in a sling, criticizing her for thinking that way, saying the NXT title stays there and she wants an immediate match. Perez questioned the intelligence of that move, given that she's hurt. So Tatum Paxley popped over the barricade, saying she would do it for her. She started playing with Lyra's hair, and then she just threw her injured arm first into the steel steps, saying the title doesn't belong to her anymore. Just as Roxy thought she was in the clear, Natalya entered, towering over her, saying she's going after the one title that she never captured in WWE. Perez passed, only for Ava to enter and make the match official. So Tatum's character acting, it's been on point for months now, and she was excellent here. I kind of wish the Natty match had been built up rather than hotshotted, just given how over she's been in NXT and the magnitude of Roxy potentially beating her. But it did make for a strong opening segment, and this alone was more TV time, I should note, than the entire women's division got on Raw. 3 hours, they got more in this segment than the entire three-hour edition of Raw. Just goes to show you how frustrating the main roster can be some weeks with that division. So we had the NXT Women's Championship, Roxy against Natty. Perez twice got murked with discus lariats, only for Natty to get thrown into the steel steps and suplexed ringside. Roxy briefly countered a sharpshooter into a crossface. Natty countered Pop Rocks into a toss and a sharpshooter, with Roxy eventually screaming during a rope break. Lola Vice kicked Natty in the ass, I think, with the referee distracted, allowing Perez to hit Pop Rocks and get the title retention. So this was an awesome match. Despite the talent of both, it actually exceeded my expectations. Natty looks immensely fit. Like, this was the best and smoothest she's wrestled in a few years. I'm glad Roxy is champion, but I could sure as shit go for like a multi-month Natty run as NXT champion, working with the division and eventually putting someone else over on the back end. I went 3.5 stars and a B for this match, and I actually might be selling it short now that I think about it. Lola backstage said she was sick of biding her time and would make her own opportunities, including winning the Women's North American Championship. Natty attacked her, and they had a brawl. I just really like Natty down in NXT. Ariana Grace was telling Sol Ruka about the Gigi Dolan situation backstage. She mentioned the new title. Ruka said she had dibs on that, so Grace stormed off. Bison came in screaming, and Ruka tried to put her in her place, and she also stormed off. Sol's acting was actually pretty realistic here for a change. It was a nice segment overall, but again, you have Ariana talking about Gigi, and Gigi's still not being there. So something's got to be going on I guess we'll find out sooner than later. The tag team championship was on the line, the Wolf Dogs against Nathan Frazier and Axiom. So NXT Anonymous posted a video of the faces begging for a rematch after Stand and Deliver, and Ava only granted it after the video got posted and she kind of felt she didn't have any other choice. Backstage, the faces agreed to part as teammates if they were not successful winning the titles, which again gave away the result of the match. The champions got pumped up backstage with Baron Corbin forcing Bron Breakker to admit that it was actually a good decision to team up. Bron refused, only because Corbin was asking him. And then he ran back in and said, Wolf Dogs for life, obviously. He was happy they're teaming. So this was the main event match. Axiom hit an Escalera Tope outside. Frazier countered the press power slam with a tornado DDT before Axiom hit a frog splash and Frazier hit a 450 for a broken fall. Breakker caught Axiom flying with a snap power slam. Corbin then put Frazier in a sleeper, making him watch as Breakker hit Axiom with his power slam for a false finish. Axiom ate a deep six and the champions combined for a Steinerizer and a broken fall. Corbin nearly countered a tornado DDT into End of Days, but Axiom escaped and immediately countered a Breakker spear with Golden Ratio. Braun hit a rolling, jumping knee on Frazier, who leapfrogged the Bulldog. Corbin caught him avoiding the spear, but Breakker got pushed outside. Axiom hit Corbin with Golden Ratio, and Frazier added the Phoenix Splash 4. The 1-2-3 to win the titles in 12 minutes, and what an effing match this was. The story of the rematch, overcoming the way they were defeated in the prior challenge, the electricity of the moment. It's really tough to ask for more from these guys. I'm at 4.25 stars and an A. Sad to see the Wolf Dogs' reign come to an end. Obviously, Breakker's getting called up. We knew that already. I remain consistent in that I hope Corbin joins him and they actually stay a tag team on the main roster. And really, if anyone over there is actually paying attention, they're going to do it. It's the best opportunity they have to bring Corbin back to Maine as a likable character. These guys mesh incredibly well together. There's a ready-made story where they team up for a while, maybe even win the titles and then eventually split. Maybe they bring Braun up individually. After a month or two, he gets into hot water with Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. He needs to find a teammate. Corbin comes up, gets a pop. They reform. That could absolutely work. Either way, the Wolf Dogs era in NXT is not going to be forgotten. And one other thing that's weird. So it seems like WWE has decided, maybe not in all cases, but at least with Breakker, and they did this with Roman Reigns also, that his beard makes him look like a heel. So when he's a babyface, he should only have a goatee. But Breakker, just like Reigns, looks eons better with a beard. I should also say, just like the Silver King, I look way better with a beard than when I just had a goatee. And changing it back is super odd. Now, after NXT went off the air, Corbin put over Breakker as a future WWE champion, and Braun put him over as not just a great partner, but a great friend. They hugged. It was emotional. So going back to the match, moments into the champion celebration, Authors of Pain charged out of the crowd with all of Final Testament showing up. The faces were completely laid out with Super Collider as the heels celebrated in the ring. Random as hell, kind of exciting. AOP was great in NXT. Maybe the idea is that they came back without seasoning. They need to put in some work again. I could see the faces being transitional champions in that regard. They could also just retain by DQ or something whenever that match ultimately happens. But it also makes me wonder, like, what is the deal with the Good Brothers? They went from seemingly having a Stand and Deliver match to just being bumped and now jumped in line by AOP. Obafemi hit the ring saying his title retention was inevitable and it would be the genesis for him to rule the division. He also said a long reign was inevitable and no one could stop him when suddenly, and when I say out of nowhere, I mean out of nowhere, Ivar, dressed like a normal person, t-shirt, jeans, leather vest, kind of looked awkward. Ivar comes in and says he loved what he saw at Stand and Deliver, and the fans chanted slap that meat, which was fantastic. He said he was jealous of the match and knows he's the man who can take the title from Oba. Femi tried to walk past Ivar, so Ivar slammed a hand on his chest. Femi headbutted him, only to take a springboard crossbody. Mother of meat. This was random as tell, and yet Ivar was not a great promo by any means, but it was perfectly solid for NXT. I badly want to see this meat slapping masterpiece. And seeing Ivar as a normal person, it was kind of a treat for a change. Remember, we've talked about it before that he has trained multiple wrestlers, including Kofi Kingston. Maybe he's moving to a new role. Not exactly sure, but they need some space on the main roster if they're going to be calling all these people up. So school is back in session at Chase U with Andre Chase presenting Fallon Henley and Kalani Jordan with honorary degrees for their help at Stand and Deliver. JC Jane and Jasmine Nixon erupted, asking whether Chase was going to tell Thea Hale why she had to bail them out of debt. She said it was actually Hale's fault. That she eventually revealed that Chase bet on Thea to win the title at Great American Bash a couple months ago. And when he threw in the towel, he mortgaged the university's future just to protect her. He admitted it, saying he'll always bet on her over Chase U, so she stormed out. So, look, let's be honest. We're all adults here. Well, the vast majority of us, so I'll use appropriate terms. All I'm going to say is that this segment and the way it was acted reminded me of a certain type of film. It was immensely odd in that way. Now, that said, it kind of closed the loop on the storyline, but I'm not quite sure why Thea's upset learning that someone believed in her so much that they went to those extremes. She might disagree with the decision, but that's a lot of belief in her. It's not like he bet on her to lose and then threw the match. He bet on her to win and then threw in the towel because he wanted to protect her. That would be more problematic if he threw in the towel and they lost, like, because he bet on her to lose. Also, you got Thea and Duke Hudson and Riley Osborne. They're all taking classes. They've been doing it for years. Yet Henley and Jordan wrestle one time and they get honorary degrees. Where are the degrees for Hudson and Hale? They've been there for 2 years working their asses off. Am I nitpicking a developmental wrestling show with a fake college storyline? I am. But you have to admit, those are serious logic gaps. And despite me pointing out all of this, I actually like the segment a lot. I'm glad they're continuing the story. I'm just being honest when it comes to the sense that it makes. So Henley and Jordan fought Kiana James and Izzy Dame. Both faces impressed massively. Henley went on the type of hot tag run that proved she is more than ready in the ring, at least, for the main roster. She had a cool tornado-style suplex on James, then saved Jordan from a shot by James. Jordan caught her off the distraction with the 401k and got the win. This was a really fun match. And as I've been saying for weeks now, Kiana is back to the 401k finisher far, far, far better than the other one. It made no sense why they ever changed it. We had two long women's segments in the first 25 minutes of NXT. Again, that's probably three or four times as much as the women got on Raw Monday night. All of it inside of 25 minutes on NXT. That's the difference between the products right now. Javon Evans fought Scripps. Evans' vignette replayed with Scripps and Jada Parker having a problem with it, saying they were both set for wins on the show. Evans had some highlights, but Scripps focused on grounding him. Evans had a really cool springing heel kick, then a springboard cutter that was about 50 times more impressive athletically than Cody Rhodes does it. Evans avoided a perfect Scripps moonsault and hit a double jump tornado splash for the win. You literally could not ask for a better TV debut if you're a 19-year-old phenom like this kid. Holy shit. It is crazy how he's completely different from Obafemi, yet both guys seemingly have endless ceilings despite limited experience. And I know that Javon Evans was wrestling on the independents for at least a couple years. He's still only 19 years old. He cut his teeth, Evans did, in DPW as Jay Malachi. And it is worth finding some of that tape because I've been watching him on and off for the last year. He is for real. Brinley Reese fought Jada Parker. Brinley actually threw Jada around some, and she hit a perfect cartwheel clothesline, way better than Charlotte Flair. The finish was actually super cool. Parker just ran into Reese with her hip and got the win. That's the thickness right there. She looked really good again. The week-to-week progress is outstanding for her. Ridge Holland backstage, well before NXT, had major pit stains wearing a maroon shirt. No one should ever wear a maroon shirt. Someone should have told him. He said he wanted to apologize to Joe Gacy, who popped out from behind a curtain, and said he understood the situation, messed with his head. Holland angrily said he was sorry and stormed out when LWO confronted him and accidentally slammed a door on Cruz del Toro's head. That is, Holland accidentally did that. The idea being that he's not doing stuff wrong on purpose, but he just has the worst luck. It was actually the best one of these segments since they started the storyline. And then it turned from good to bad because like 30 minutes later, it was announced that Holland would fight Joaquin Wilde on NXT. This guy fucking retired 2 weeks ago. How do you book him in a match without first having him come out of retirement? This is totally nonsensical. Hopefully it gets explained next week, but I'm pretty much completely out on this. Charlie Dempsey backstage put over Bloodsport and that style of wrestling, with the rest of No Quarter Cash Crew excited that he got the win. D'Angelo Family, Sands the Don, popped up talking shit to them, and it got contentious, leading to a match on the show. So Damon Kemp and Miles Borm fought Stax and Luca Crucifino. No Quarter got run into each other, and they brought Dempsey into the ring as a distraction for the referee so they could basically hit Shatter Machine on Kemp for the win. It was actually a nice showing for them as a team, similarly sized and skilled. Down for them to stick together long term, there might actually be something there. Drew Gulak was notably not here. His name was removed from the Titantron as well. There was that Ronda Rousey controversy right before WrestleMania, which might have been the reason. I still don't think we've talked about that on the show. We're probably going to have to do that next Tuesday. She claimed he was inappropriate with her pulling the string of her sweatpants. He claimed that he was shaking people's hands in a group. It was a total accident, and he already apologized to her. That's really all I'm going to say about it at this juncture. It could be temporary. I believe commentary mentioned him by name. I could be wrong about that. Metaphor was popping about their performance at Stand and Deliver, but Oro Mensah was depressed. Dijak popped in, asking which of them made the skit of him. Noam Dar took the blame, saying Dijak needed to get out more, so he gave him a one-time warning. Not much to this, but you would expect it would lead to them a match, but they didn't book it, so that's where we stand. So that wraps up NXT. I actually thought it was a really successful episode coming out of Stand and Deliver, but as noted, there were multiple logic gaps in storylines, and for a show like NXT that is really driven by storylines, given how much of the talent is green, that was a disappointing part to it. I wish it was a tighter show overall, but the wrestling, we got three quality matches on the show, some interesting storylines developing, clearly a new set of tag team champions, possibly some new champions coming up as well. Overall, I would call it a success. So that wraps up this unique WWE NXT episode of the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. As mentioned, we will be back on Friday with a two-week AEW show. And I know some of you are waiting with bated breath for the Silver King's take on the all-in footage being released. Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to be taping the AEW show myself on Friday, but I did tape that segment alongside Vintage Chris Vanini on Thursday, so we will have a conversation about that footage, and then the Silver King will take you the rest of the way through AEW. With all of that said, allow me to remind you that the Getting Over Wrestling podcast
is all about Defy.
So head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Please remember to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. Please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You will get instant reaction audio to Raw, NXT Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, along with exclusive news posts on Friday. Again, buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. It has been a wild 2 weeks here on the Getting Over Wrestling podcast, and I feel like we have one more wild week in us again. Friday show coming up. Next WWE show on Tuesday. But at this point, it is time for the Silver King to sign off and leave you with three final words. Bye for now.